Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf Chaf Zayin Amud Bet, and we're really right in the middle of the Amud. We're opposite the Tosfot of Tipuach Bayad, and that is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 17 lines up from the bottom. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. So our topic for today, in general, we're talking about many different aspects of mourning. And our previous recording, we talked about hespedim and other kinds of eulogies, and also clapping one's hands and stamping one's feet in mourning. And we talked at the end about chevra kadishas, about the formation of certain groups that would make sure that when someone in town died, that they were buried properly. Now we move on to another topic, and a very challenging topic, which is about the limits of mourning. So we start 17 lines up from the bottom towards the end of the line. V'amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav. We had a number of statements by Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav already, and this continues the series. Kol hamitkashe al meto yoter midai. Someone who is aggrieved for their dead relative too much, al meit acher hu boche, he will in the future have to cry for another dead relative. This is a very ominous sort of teaching. First of all, it does not explain what it means here, what is too much. But the idea that if you overly mourn for someone that you're going to have another tragedy is a very scary idea. And the question is why that would be the case. So I'm not exactly sure. There are a couple of different interpretations. One is that wallowing in grief means that you'll never emerge from your tragedy. You'll continue to be grieving until the next tragedy happens to you, which will happen at some point. Or perhaps it's considered a kind of a sin in that mourning too much for a lost relative is a way of saying that you don't accept God's judgment, that it was time for them to leave the world. But in any event, it's not a good thing. I would flip the script and say it's not good for the mourner, is what it is saying, but it's not good for the mourner. It's not good psychologically to mourn too much. You have to know how much to mourn and how much not. But the next story takes it at face value, so to speak. Hahi itata, there was a certain woman, Dahavat Beshiba Bute Rav Huna, who was in the neighborhood of Rav Huna. Havula Shiva Bnei, she had seven sons. We don't know anything about her husband, but she had seven sons. Meit Chad Minahu, one of her sons died, and already that's a terrible tragedy for a child to die in the life of its mom. Havat Kabachia Biyaterta Alei, and she was crying excessively over him. She could not be comforted. Now, I don't know if this is during the Shiva that she couldn't stop crying at all, or if she continued, and this seems more likely, that she, even after the mourning period, she continued to be unconsolable. A little bit like we say of her, like Yaakov Avinu was unable to be consoled for Yosef. Shalach la Rav Huna. Rav Huna heard about this, and he sent her a message. And he said, Lo tavdi hachi. He said, don't do this. In other words, you know, pull yourself together. Go back to your regular life. Lo ashkecha bei, and she did not heed him. Shalach la, he sent her another message. Itzaitet mutav. If you follow my direction, good. Meaning I'm telling you, don't continue to mourn. Ve'ilo, and if you don't follow my direction, tzavit zivata le'idach. Prepare a burial shroud for another son. That's what he tells her. And that is a very, very hard thing to say to someone. I guess he was giving her some tough love. But it's unfortunate, because that's the next thing that happens in the story is meet another son died. And then, quickly, it says, Umitu kulhu, all of her sons died. So all seven of her sons died. Now, to me, this sounds like something unusual was going on. Perhaps it was a plague or something, but in any event, she was mourning a lot for one son, and then she had a lot more tragedy to deal with soon after. Lesov, in the end, Rav Huna sent her another message, Amarla, or he didn't send her a message, he said to her personally, Timush zavdata lenafshayich, prepare your own burial shroud, umita, and then she died as well. That's basically a very terrible story. Okay, moving on to the next teaching. We quote a pasuk here from Yirmiyahu, chapter 22, verse 10. And this pasuk that we're going to quote, and they're going to darshan each section of it, is a prophecy that Yirmiyahu says. The chapter is about Shalum ben Yoshiyahu. Shalum, who was the son of King Yoshiyahu, who was killed in the battle at the time when the Jewish people were exiled to Bavel at the end of the first Beit HaMikdash. So what Yirmiyahu says is, Al tivku lemeit, don't cry for the dead. Because in the Churban, obviously, many people died. So he's saying here now, and I don't think he's really saying don't cry for the dead at all, but he's saying don't cry for the dead, v'al tanudu lo, and don't lament them. Instead, it's just a contrast. Instead, it says, b'chu b'cho laholech, cry a lot, b'chu b'cho, to double, cry a lot, laholech, for the one who goes away into exile. Ki lo yashuv od, because he will never return, v'ra'a et eretz molato, to see the land of his birthplace. In other words, whether this refers to Shalom, some people say it refers to Yoshiyahu himself, or to Yehoyachin, when the Jewish people were exiled, when these kings were exiled from Israel, when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, they would never be able to return and come back to see the redemption. It would happen eventually, but they would never see it. So instead of crying for those who died, cry for those who are exiled. That's the pshat in the pasuk. This is how the Gemara is going to explain it, though. So here, first it quotes the first part of the pasuk, Al tiv kula meit, don't cry for the dead, v'al tanudulo, and don't bemoan them. So the Gemara says, Al tiv kula meit, what does it mean, don't cry for the dead? Yoter mi die. It says, don't cry too much for the dead. So this is supporting the previous statement that you shouldn't be mitkashe al meito yoter mi die. The next section, v'al tanudulo, don't bemoan them, yoter mikishur, don't do it more than is specified. Ha ketzad, how? What is the proper shear? Shloshi yamim labechi, the first 3 days of the Shiva are for crying. And we said we mentioned that there were a number of specific halachot that applied only for the first 3 days. And the Mishnah said that you had to sit 3 days of Shiva in order for Yom Tov to truncate the morning, even though we don't paskin that way. And in a number of other ways, we said you really shouldn't make a Shiva call for the first 3 days because those are the days of Bechi. Many, many halachot related to the first 3 days. Those are the 3 days of crying. The Shiva lahespeid, and 7 days is the amount of time that you eulogize them. Ushloshim, and 30 days, legehutz ulutis poret, where you do not iron your clothes or cut your hair. Now, there are a number of halachot missing from this. It's obviously a shorter list. Like, it doesn't mention rechitza for Shiva, that you're not allowed to wash, and it doesn't mention kibus, doing laundry, for shloshim, but it's a truncated list. Mikan ve'elech, after 30 days, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He, says, I'atem rachamanim bo yoter mimeni. I here means not. Don't you be more merciful than I am. Meaning, I set up for you a system and a structure of mourning, and that structure of mourning goes up until 30 days, and that's how much you should mourn for. And after 30 days, you know, you emerge from mourning slowly. The first 3 days are the most intense, then the Shiva is a little less intense, the Shloshim is less intense. After 30 days, come out of mourning. Now, we know this is true for all mourners except for one's mother and father, for which you continue to mourn for 12 months. And we saw in an earlier recording, a previous daf or so, that even this, continuing to mourn for 12 months for mother and father, was not the essential din, but it was done for the sake of the honor of those who created you, who were shutafim, who were partners with Hashem in creating you. So for the sake of their kavod, we extend the mourning throughout the year. Now, the next part of the pasuk says, let me read it correctly, b'chu b'cho laholech, cry a lot for the one who goes away. So who is this one who goes away? So we mentioned that it refers to the kings of Israel who went into exile in Bavel. But there's two other opinions there are two agadic opinions that are brought in the Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda, so Rav Yehuda says, laholech b'lo banim. He says what it means is someone who goes out of the world without children. And this is a double tragedy. So the idea of b'cho b'cha, you cry for the person who died, and you also cry because he has no future generations that will take his place. And the Gemara mentions Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi lo azal lebe evla. He never used to go to a house of mourning. And I don't know why, because it's a big mitzvah, but it was his custom not to go to houses of mourning. El lamanda azal below bane. He only went when someone passed away without any children, and then he would go, to comfort the other mourners, because that was a particularly trenchant tragedy. Dichtiv, as it is written, b'chu b'chu laholech. And then the next part of the pasuk says, ki lo yashuv od, for he will never return. So this idea here is that there's no future generations. Nothing. There's no future for them, for him. V'ra'at eretz molato, to see the land of his birth. So that's the first interpretation by Rav Yehuda. Rav Huna gives a different one. Rav Huna amar, ze sha'avar avera v'shinabo. Or shanabo. This is a person who did a sin and then repeats the sin. So the one who is holech is the one who goes, so to speak, off the derech. They do a commit a sin. And then after they commit the sin, they do it again. How does he read it? Rav Huna l'taime. Rav Huna reads it according to his own reasoning. De amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, "Kevan she'avar adam aveira v'shanabo." Once a person commits a sin and then repeats it, hutralo, it becomes permitted for him. The Gemara says, "Hutralo solkadatach." What are you saying? If you do a sin twice, now it becomes mutar, it becomes permitted. No, ela ema. Rather, I would say, na'aseit lo keheter. It appears to him like it's permitted. In other words, you get used to doing a sin. The first time you cross a certain line, you cross the red line, it's a big deal, and you know that you're doing something wrong. But then you start doing it every day, and you kind of get used to doing this sin. And we know that this is true and happens all the time. So the way he understands the verse, though, is that a person who is holech, in other words, becomes accustomed to doing a certain kind of a sin, that person, lo yashuv od, can never do tshuva again. That's how Rashi writes it. Rashi writes, mashma, it implies, mikan ve'elech, that from that point on, lo yase le'olam tshuva, he can never do tshuva. And v'ra'at eretz molato means to return to the land of his birthplace, means to return to his creator, that once you become accustomed to do a sin, it becomes either very difficult or impossible to do tshuva. Okay, four lines up from the bottom. Amar Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Levi said, Avel, a mourner, Shloshe Yamim Harishonim, the first 3 days, Yiret Atzmo, he should see himself, Ki'ilu Cherev Munachat Lo Bein Shtei Yirechotav, as if there is a sword that is pointing in between his two thighs. That's the version we have in the Gemara. It's in parentheses, and many amend it. And in my margin, it says this is the Girsa of the She'iltot, to Rav Achai, writes, instead of Yerechotav, his thighs, Kitefav, his shoulders, which to me makes more sense. So there's a sort of sword of Damocles pointing down right in between his shoulder blades, as if he is in danger of dying. Mishlosha ad Shiva, from 3 days until the end of Shiva, ki ilu munachat lo kenegdo b'keren zavit. The sword is not in between his shoulder blades, but it's in the corner of the room. Mikan ve'elech, after that, ki ilu overet kenegdo bashuk, as if it is when he is walking in public, the sword is next to him, but it's not in the room with him, and it's not threatening him directly. So slowly, slowly, the sword goes further away from him. There is a dispute here as to what mikan ve'elech means, because it says here the first 3 days and then from 3 to 7. So does mikan ve'elech mean from 7 until 30 days or from 7 days until yud bet chodesh? So Tosva says until yud bet chodesh, until 12 months. But, and I don't know who says this, one of the Rishonim says that it depends on who it is. For other relatives, it goes until 30 days. For a parent, it goes until 12 months. Now, Tosfot also quotes a version of the Yerushalmi, which says it slightly differently. In the Yerushalmi, it says, Kol Shiva, the whole 7 days of Shiva, it is as if there is a cherev shlufa, a brandished sword, a drawn sword. And then from after Shiva until Shloshim, the sword is held loosely, rofefet. It's unsheathed, but it's not being held up in a threatening way. La'achar yud bet chodesh, after 12 months, or perhaps after shloshim, he says yud bet chodesh here, but he chozeret letara, it is put back into its sheath. So And then he says, "V'lamaha davar doma." The Yerushalmi says, "What is the matter compared to lekipa shel avanim? It is like an archway, like a doorway that is full of, that has stones in it." So the whole idea of the Freemasons is that they had the technology to place stones so that without any glue or mortar or nails or anything, if you place the stones correctly, they form an archway and the gravity and weight of the stones holds it in place. But he says, Kevan shenizdazeh achat mehen nizdazu kulam. But if you take out one of the stones, especially if you were to take out the keystone, the whole archway will crumble. So the suggestion here is that once death is loose upon the world, once the Malach HaMaves is out and about, there's a risk to everyone. You don't know when it's going to stop. So just because you had a relative who died doesn't mean that the death is going to stop. You might be next, and you should feel that sense of aim of a year, a dread and fear. Tosfot HaRash says it perhaps in a slightly different way. He says that people should see death as an opportunity to do tshuva, to look into your actions. And I think this is not because you're necessarily afraid that death is contagious, which is kind of a weird idea, but that the idea that death can be sudden and you don't know when it will happen. So you should use the death of a loved one partially as a wake-up call to look into your own actions and see if you should live the rest of your life in a better way. All right, we'll stop there on the last line of Daf Chav Zayin Amud Bet. Have a wonderful day.